Thanks for having me. I'm having a great time here in PI. So today I will talk about some of my work I've done during my PhD thesis. Some boundary contribution in holographic entanglement entropy in field theory and holographic theory. So let me first start with some motivation. Okay. So boundary effects can be seen as a unifying theme in theoretical physics. For example, in condensed matter systems, quantum imperative models such as Kondo models are described by boundary CFT. In gauge gravity duality, of course, you get the conformal boundary of ADS. And in entanglement entropy, the entangling surface is also a kind of boundary. So these three are different kind of boundary, of course. And what I will talk about is physical boundaries. So when the space-time has a physical boundary. And why is that interesting to look at boundaries and entanglement entropy? First, entanglement entropy is sensible to boundary effects. Okay, so we might learn something about boundary quantum field theory. In odd dimension, universal logarithmic terms are pure boundary effects. Okay, no bulk, but pure boundary effects. Second, most physical systems actually confined to some boundaries. So if someday we hope to be able to measure actually the entanglement entropy or Rényi entropy or something similar, probably the boundary effect should be important. And the last would be why not? Why not? So I will focus my talk. Yeah.
Sorry. So about Adi, you mentioned that the universal log terms are boundary effects, but even without a boundary, you have universal terms, right? They're just not logarithmic.
Yeah. Sure. You're right.
Okay.
I was talking about just logarithmic. But you get also, for example, the you mean in three. You get F. Right. Yeah. I will focus on logarithmic universal term. Okay. But you're right. And then I will also focus on the case where the entangling surface intersects the boundary. That will produce these logarithmic terms. Okay, so before giving the outline, we'll just remind quickly the entanglement in quantum mechanics. So we start with a pure state, okay, in a Hilbert space, a quantum system. We have our density matrix. We divide the system into two complementary parts, say A and B, and assume that the Hilbert space factorizes, okay, on A and B. Then we define the reduced density matrix, rho of A, okay, taking the trace in the B part, okay. So that's the density matrix for A. Then an entangled state for this B bipartite system in a pure state is a state that cannot be written like this. Okay, so it's not separable. Okay. Or with this condition, trace of rho squared of any part of the system is less than 1. And a measure of this entanglement is a von Neumann definition of entanglement entropy, which is this one. So trace of A over A of rho A log A, rho A, sorry. And there is an equivalent formula to the replica formula or replica trick. And that's the formula we'll use to compute entanglement entropy, which is easier to compute that than this one. Okay, so this is the outline. So first I will present some quantum field theory result in simple cases. I will use the heat kernel method to compute the entanglement entropy. I'll plan some explicit computation. And then I will talk about conformal anomaly in CFT and BCFT, see what is the difference, actually, in this odd dimension. Okay. And then I will also talk about holographic and segment entropy and the ADS BCFT correspondence and the different prescription that there exists to compute this the entanglement entropy. Okay. So first, quantum field theory. Okay, so the usual story in quantum field theory that the density matrix rho is evaluated on the spatial hypersurface, say t equals zero. Okay, then we divide again our system introducing an entangling surface, which I call sigma, okay, the boundary of A. The entanglement entropy is identified with Neumann's entropy. We have short-range correlation across the entangling surface, so we need to, of course, put a UV cutoff. And the general structure of entanglement entropy is this one. So the first term is the area law, central the area of sigma, and subleading terms. And in even dimension, we've got a logarithmic term and a constant term in odd dimension. Okay. And I will use this formula to compute, this is a replica formula, to compute the entanglement entropy. Okay, so let me maybe remind what is the replica method. So we have to take the trace to the power n of the rho to the power n and the trace of that. Okay, so this is like a matrix product. Okay, a schematic representation. We glue each side of the along the cut. This is the region A that we want to compute the entanglement entropy of. Okay, and this define a partition function on a replicated manifold. Okay, we'll call it MN, which has a conical singularity along the entangling surface. Okay, and then the entanglement entropy is just we just have to compute the effective action on this replicated space set. Okay, with the conical singularity. So that's the replica method. So the question is how to compute this partition function on the singular manifold. So if you look at the one loop level, the partition function can be expressed at the functional determinant, okay, of our operator that describes the field theory. Okay, so that's the partition function, the functional determinant, and can be written using a Schwinger proper time representation in terms of the trace of the heat kernel, okay, of this operator. So the heat kernel operator, which is this, okay, is the solution to the heat equation, hence the name heat kernel, and with this initial condition. Okay. So the thing is, we can compute, let's say, easily the heat kernel on the regular manifold, on flat space, okay. But how to relate it to the one on the replicated spacetime, the one on which there is a conical singularity. So there is a formula, which is a Sommerfeld's formula. Okay, so for example, say that the entangling surface is defined by t equals zero, equal x, okay, x equals zero also, so it's just an hyperplane, okay. Then in this subspace tx, okay, we introduce some polar coordinates, okay, system of coordinates. Phi is now 2 pi n periodic, okay, and the heat kernel on the spacetime with the conical singularity is given by the regular heat kernel on the regular space, okay, with not without singularity, plus this piece, okay. So this is just a contour integral. Okay, the contour is just two vertical lines at a plus and minus pi, okay. And if n equals one, this will vanish because it's pi n comes to pi periodic, and this will vanish. So that's the Sommerfeld formula. Then you get also the heat kernel expansion. So if we look at small s, the trace of the heat kernel at small s admits this type of expansion, okay? And with the AP of n, which is the heat coefficient, that can be written like this, okay? So if n goes to 1, okay, we get a first piece which is, let's call it a bulk term plus a surface term that depends on the geometry of the entangling surface, okay, proportional to 1 minus n plus subleading terms. And AP will be 0 for P odd, okay, on manifold without boundary. Okay? But if we add boundary, if manifold has boundaries, this AP odd will no longer be 0, and they will acquire some boundary terms. Okay? So let me present maybe a simple example. So we want to compute the entanglement entropy for the half space. Okay. So we divide Minkowski space into two. Okay. So the entangling surface is just a plane. Okay. So for a scalar field, the heat kernel is the well-known exponential. Okay. If we apply Sommerfeld formula, we get this first term, which is the volume term, coming from the regular part of the heat kernel, plus this piece, which is proportional to the area of sigma. Okay, and then if we apply the replica formula for the computing the entanglement entropy, this piece will disappear. Okay, it's only proportional to n, so it will disappear, and we will only be left with the area part. Okay. So this is the simple example. So that was for manifold without boundary. But now let's say that we have some boundary to the manifold, and let's see what happens. So we work in d-dimensional space, flat space, okay, and the space-time, so Cartesian coordinates, the entangling surface is again defined by t equals 0 and x equals 0, so it is an hyperplane. The boundary is a collection of hyperplanes, parallel hyperplanes, and the entangling surface intersects the boundary orthogonally, okay, at some codimension d minus 3, let's call it p, and we will impose different boundary conditions, so Neumann, Dirichlet, or Robin, on this boundary. Let me remind the heat kernel on the infinite space, so space without boundaries, is this one, okay? So it's massive scalar field. And the entanglement entropy for this case is this, so the first term is the usual area law plus subleading terms with mass, okay? So first case, yeah?
So most of these terms are non-universal, like these power
yeah. Terms. Yeah, sure. So single plane case. So this is the simplest case you can do. We have just one plane boundary located at let's say y equals 0. So this is in four dimension. So here P, the intersection of the entangling surface and the boundary, will be just a line. Okay. In three dimension, it would be one point. Okay. We can impose Neumann.
So can you explain a bit more the geometry? Which dimension?
This picture is for d equal 4. You cannot see the.
Okay.
So this is for four dimension. Okay.
So sigma is four dimension.
No, sigma is d minus 2 dimensional. So it's 2 dimensional here. Okay.
So sigma is the entangling.
Sigma is the entangling surface. Yes. Dm here is the boundary, which is boundary of the space, physical boundary. Okay. And the intersection between sigma and dm, which is orthogonal, is just the line, the red line.
So you put the entangling surface at the boundary. That's what you
mean. Well, yeah, you get a boundary.
The surface intersects your boundary.
Sorry, what? I didn't hear.
Your entangling surface intersects.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to.
No, it doesn't have to, but
yeah,
I'm...
No, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. You can, yeah, you can, but...
So that's the case you're looking at.
That's the case I'm looking at, yeah.
Presumably, if it doesn't intersect, you'll get some finite correction. As
exactly.
Some
exactly, yeah. You get finite correction. For example, if you are in a BCFT3, you have you look at an integer surface, which is a circle, okay, which does not intersect the boundary. You just have a finite part, but not no logarithmic new terms. So yeah, that's true.
The asymptotic expansion of the heap kernel is sort of only sensitive to local stuff. So it
yeah, that's right. Exactly. Okay, so that's the picture. The heat kernel for Neumann and JRK boundary condition. Well, if there is just one plane boundary, if you want a Neumann boundary condition, you have to anti-symmetrize it, okay, with respect to y equals zero, and JRK anti-symmetrize. Okay, so this is the heat kernel. And for Robin, it's a bit more involved. Okay, so it involves first the first term would be the heat kernel for Neumann boundary condition, which is kind of obvious because if you put h to zero in a Robin boundary condition, you get immediately a Neumann boundary condition. So you should recover Neumann if h here equals zero. And plus an integral terms, okay, which involves the coupling h. So what we find is that there appears a contribution only from P, the intersection. This is the boundary part, okay, which is subleading, of course. And a logarithmic term appears in even dimension and odd dimension, either due to the bulk part or the boundary part. Okay. For example, in three dimension, this is the extra part, which is in three dimension. In four dimension, you get this one, okay, and so on. Okay, so that's the first simple case you can find, and you find this. Sorry. The cutoff, the UV cutoff, in the theory. So I integrate over e squared to. Okay, so that's the only difference between Neumann and JRK is just a plus and minus sign. So Neumann will be positive, and JRK would be negative. So if you have two boundaries, okay, pen parallel, you impose Neumann on one and JRK on the other. The contribution from the Neumann part, Neumann boundary, will exactly cancel the one for JRK. So you will end up with zero boundary fraction. So for Robin now, so Robin, you get the Neumann part plus this integral, okay, with this f here, and you get new logarithmic terms also, okay, proportional to h, the coupling of the boundary condition, and this. What is interesting is to look at some inequalities. So the integument entropy for Neumann boundary condition is always greater than the one for Robin, which is also greater than the one for JRK. And the first limit is when H, the coupling in the Robin boundary condition, goes to zero, you recover Neumann by definition. But you can also analyze so this would be the weak coupling limit. This will be the strong coupling limit. Okay, so when h goes to plus infinity, you recover JRK boundary condition. And the question is, this h flow, okay, let's say, it will interpolate between Neumann and JRK. And actually, it is monotonic and decreasing from Neumann to JRK. So a question that we don't have really the answer yet. Is there a relation to the boundary RG flow, okay, which should decrease from Neumann to JRK along a boundary RG flow?
Do you have a physical explanation?
Not yet, no. No. It's more than it's more mathematical. It's not proof, but yeah, I don't still. But in
you said there's more degrees of freedom in Neumann.
Which is sort of true. I mean, Neumann admits like no. Zero mode can be fluctuating a lot, whereas Dirichlet is in some sense as far away from that as possible. Like, I think you can see what sort of you might be able to understand this as some behavior of the low lie modes sort of being lifted. Mm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's my digging.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, but yeah.
How to prove better.
Yeah. Okay, so that's so that was for the simple the simplest case. So now we have a rectangular boundary, so it's a cylinder, okay, with a square or rectangular base, and we can impose so Neumann boundary condition, Dirichlet, or mixed Neumann Dirichlet. In this geometry. The scalar field, the associated, the heat kernel for the scalar Laplace chain factorizes, okay, and we've got this for Neumann and Dirichlet, this form, okay, so you have to sum over the images, okay, so you can compute it, you can compute this heat kernel for Neumann and Dirichlet with the method of images, okay, so this is quite standard, and for mixed boundary condition is the same, almost the same. Same story. So everything factorizes along each coordinates direction. Okay. So here we are in the picture is for four dimensional space time. In red, this is P, the intersection. Okay. Here it's a square or a rectangle, if you want. Okay. So if you compute the entanglement entropy, you find this formula.
I'm sorry, I just missed something.
Yeah.
You have lots of different boundaries. So when you mix them, how do you mix them? Which
so,
ones?
So, So, each in front of. Where is my pointer? Yeah. So, this one here on the left side with this one on the right side. It's Neumann, Dirichlet, or Neumann, Dirichlet.
Okay.
And the same in each direction. I look at
each one is Neumann or they're all
exactly. Yeah, and you can choose Okay. So if you do the computation, you find this formula, okay, which is not really so you get some bi that depends on the boundary condition Neumann, Dirichlet or mixed, and some theta function of Jacobi. Okay, so the third of the fourth. Depending on the boundary condition, but this formula is not really we cannot see much from this. So we look at the limit epsilon goes to zero, the cutoff goes to zero, and we find this expansion. Okay, so of course the leading term is the area law plus sub-leading terms. Okay, for each epsilon power of epsilon, and the logarithmic term at the end here. The logarithmic term is given by this, proportional to P0, this P, and these terms, P of n, the formula, the general formula for whatever boundary condition you want to look at, is given by this formula, okay? But again, not really... B is just a constant that captures the boundary condition. Plus minus one. Sorry?
L is your net.
I didn't.
What is L? B and N.
B and N?
L is the length of.
L. Okay, the length of the separation between the two boundaries. So let's just look at these boundary terms. For we put pure Neumann condition, so Neumann condition every boundary. Or Dirichlet, boundary condition on every boundaries. And actually, Pn is just the n area of the entangling surface. Okay? So, if our entangling surface is d minus 2 squared, so like in this picture, okay? Pn, so the area, first the area low is the area of sigma, P, the second collection would be the perimeter of the area, okay? And the last collection, which is the logarithmic term, will actually be the corners, the number of corners, okay? So in this case, so in D equal 3, sigma is a line, it's just a line, and P0 count the number of intersection between the entangling surface and the boundary, okay? So a little bit earlier, I show you just the case for one boundary, okay? And the logarithmic term was P0 was actually equal to 1 because there was just only one intersection. It's two boundaries, it's 2, of course. And also for D equal 4 dimension, you get this, the same story. So in the rest of the talk, I will mostly focus on this distance or the logarithmic term, okay? And to see why I think it's interesting is that let's look at the conformal anomaly, for example, and the difference between the CFT and the BCFT, boundary conformal field theory. So if we are in space-time without boundary, the anomaly is given by these terms, okay? So the first is the Euler density plus a bunch of Weyl invariance terms. But in odd dimension, you cannot construct invariance of odd dimension on a manifold without boundary, so you don't have a conformal anomaly in odd dimension. But if the spacetime has boundaries, you can construct these boundary terms, and actually you acquire some different boundary terms. So these extra terms in red here are defined as the boundary. Okay, so the delta function is when you integrate. So if you look at the integrated conformal anomaly, it just means that it's the integral over just the boundary. Okay, so it's the same structure, an Euler density of the boundary plus some Weyl invariant of the boundary. So that's why if you want to compute entanglement entropy in a space where, in the case where the entangling surface intersects the boundary, we pick up some logarithmic term which is related to this boundary conformal anomaly. And so it will contain information about the boundary charges and so on. So the universal logarithmic term in the entanglement entropy. So for, yeah?
Can you go back one slide? So these I hat, the boundary Weyl invariant.
Yeah.
So you put them also in even odd dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Why they don't appear then in the odd dimension substrate? Like, are these odd dimensional Weyl invariant?
So in space-time without boundary, these Weyl invariants appear in even dimensional.
Yeah. And then at the boundary of an even dimensional.
Yeah.
Shouldn't that be an odd dimensional Weyl invariant that produces? Maybe I'm not understanding what these hatted quantities are.
Okay. So it's Weyl invariant, but you also get a curvature, extrinsic curvature. So you can construct, okay, yeah.
More of them.
Yeah, more of them, yeah. Yeah. So it's not just Weyl, you got Weyl contracted with the extension curvature and so. Yeah, sure. Okay, so let's look at the logarithmic term in the entanglement entropy. Actually, this logarithmic term is expressed in terms of the proportional to the heat coefficient, the D, the AD, the D, let's say D, I don't know if it's really English, but okay. So related to the integrated conformal anomaly, okay, and can be derived with this formula. So the integrated conformal anomaly on the regular manifold minus the derivative with respect to n of the conformal anomaly on the spacetime with the conical singularity. And so S log, if we are in an even dimensional CFT, so without boundaries, just vanishes, but it will no longer vanish if we are on a spacetime with boundaries. And we will actually have access to this boundary boundary charges, these new boundary charges for the B, of the BCFT. And that for any D. Okay, so maybe an example in D equal three dimension. So in three dimension, the logarithmic term, the conformal anomaly is a pure boundary term. So there is two contribution, a Ricci curvature plus an extrinsic curvature of the boundary with two boundary charges, A and Q. If I look at, if I want to compute the integument entropy for a planar boundary, okay, and also a plane entangling surface that intersects this boundary, okay. So in three dimension, the boundary is just a line, okay, and it intersects orthogonally the entangling surface, which is also just a line, okay. So you find this for the entropy. So the first term is again the area law plus the logarithmic term, and in the case where sigma, the entangling surface, and the boundary are orthogonal to each other, the logarithmic term is proportional to the charge A here and to the number of intersection between sigma and the boundary. So for example, if you compute the integument entropy for a strip, okay, not the full half space, but a strip, you get the entangling surface has two components, okay, and this NP, which is the number of intersection, will be four intersection. Okay, so that works. Also, if you have just one boundary, okay, you put a half circle center on this boundary. Again, it's the same thing. You get just two intersection. You get the same. You should get the same answer. Okay. So that was the story for the quantum field theory, and now let's try to compute these quantities in the holographic framework, which will be ADS BCFT correspondence. So I just remind the holographic formula, Ryu Takanagi formula. So we have an ADS D plus one space, the conformal boundary here, where the CFT lives. In the CFT, we get our entangling surface. Okay. Gamma A is the minimal codimension two surface anchored this boundary. Okay. We evaluate his area, and we get the holographic entanglement entropy. Okay. So that's the usual story. But now we have a CFT, which is actually a BCFT. So what would be the holographic dual to a BCFT? And the holographic picture is the following. So we get the bulk B, which is ADS D plus one. It has a conformal boundary M. This conformal boundary, which is the CFT, has itself a boundary. It's the boundary of the boundary CFT. And the boundary of the boundary CFT is extended into the bulk, okay, forming a surface or a brain, call it S, like this. So this is our CFT, ADS, and the boundary of the CFT is extended here into the bulk, okay. And the boundary of the bulk is the union of M and S. That's the geometrical picture. And there is actually a different prescription. So the first one is due to Takanagi. So we start with this gravitational action. So this is the usual gravitational action, okay, with the Gibbons Hawking term for the conformal boundary. And he had this part, which is the brain part, okay, of the action. K is the extrinsic curvature of the S, the extension of the boundary into the bulk, and he had some. You can add some T is some matter terms, okay, be constant or anything actually. And if we vary this section with respect to the induced metric on S here, imposing Neumann boundary condition, you find that the shape of the of the extension of the boundary into the bulk obeys this this equation. Okay, so if T here was a constant, it would be just okay here T gamma ij. Okay. So in this picture, actually, S is dynamical in the sense that it will back react on the space time. Okay, so that means that can have matter located on the brain, and it should back react on the space time. Okay, so but for arbitrary boundary in the bulk in the CFT, solving this equation is actually very difficult. Okay, for generic arbitrary shape, you have to do some perturbation. Some perturbation solution, so it's technically very difficult. But for a constant T, for example, for flat boundary in the conformal theory, there is no back reaction. Okay, you can solve the equation open chain plus this boundary condition. You find the ADS in the bulk, and you can solve this for flat boundary and bolts. Okay. Yeah.
So this is just like. So we should take T as some fixed external thing that you specify. Is that
yeah?
And so this is like Einstein equation, except you're fixing the opposite boundary condition rather than the intrinsic metric. You're fixing the pi.
Okay. So that's the first prescription due to Takanagi. But some people say that okay, this is nice, but this is really complicated for arbitrary. For example, if I want, I have a BCFT 3, let's say, and I don't want to look at a circle for the boundary of the CFT, but some ellipse, for example, or some deformed ball. Okay, you cannot, you cannot solve it. Okay, you cannot solve this equation easily for this generic shape. So some people say that these equations are maybe too restrictive. If you want to have ADS in the bulk, okay. So some people are just considering what they call restricted Takanagi prescription. Sorry, and instead of looking at the tensorial equations, they look just at the trace of this equation. Okay, so this imposes less. How do you say it? Conditions. okay, restriction on the boundary. Okay, so that's just a scalar equation. Okay, just for the trace of the extrinsic curvature of the brain. Another one would be to look at the case where this. This brain is actually a minimal surface. Okay, so you can derive this proposal to this action. Okay, so you add some boundary volume terms, and the extension of the boundary into the bulk is governed by some Nambu-Goto equation. Okay, the same equation, and you get that k equals zero. Okay, but here. The brain is entirely fixed. Okay, you don't have freedom. Here, T is a free parameter. Okay, you can vary it at will. In this case, it's just fixed. Okay.
Is that a sufficient boundary condition? I would have thought you'd have to. If it's a well-defined problem, specify all of K. I would think that this is no longer well-defined. In the sense that the solution will no longer be.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, yeah, that's true. In this, in the Takanagi prescription, the solution is unique because you specify each kaj. But in this, actually, you have more solution. That's actually true. Yeah. Okay. Let's look at how we compute the entanglement entropy with this prescription. So maybe this, I hope this picture will be. Understandable, I'm not sure, but let's try. So DM, the boundary of the CFT, the line, the black line here, okay, is extended into the bulk this is the surface. H in orange, I think, is the minimal surface anchored on the entangling surface. Okay, it intersects the boundary of the CFT and also the boundary of the box. Okay, and the holographic formula, we keep the same as the Ryu-Takenagi for computing the entanglement entropy. But we expect to find some boundary contribution because H now, okay, the Ryu-Takenagi surface, intersects the boundary of the box. And we will do computation for one particular case. So in BCFT4, M will be flat, the boundary geometry will be flat. The boundary of the CFT will be cylindrical. And again, it will intersect the entangling surface orthogonally. Okay, so that's the geometrical setup. And here is the result. So if we compute the entanglement entropy with the minimal surface prescription, k equals 0, t equals 0, we get this for the logarithmic part of the entanglement entropy. So the first term is the Euler density for the boundary, plus some extrinsic curvature defined first for sigma and for the intersection of the entangling surface with the boundary. Okay. So we found this result, but we are in ADS BCFT. So the presence of these boundaries should break some supersymmetry, right? We have some boundaries, and so some symmetries must be broken. However, we can, by appropriately choosing the boundary condition, preserve some of it. Okay, and the question would be, for which boundary condition in the BCFT are we computing the entanglement entropy using this minimal surface prescription? Okay, so that's the interesting question: for which boundary condition have actually computed the holographic entanglement entropy? And the answer is, if you compute the entanglement entropy for the n equal 4 S-strain superhelming theory at weak coupling, so just for the free supermultiplet, with boundary condition that preserves half of the supersymmetry, which is actually the maximal amount you can preserve, well, you find this formula, okay, for the logarithmic part, which actually agrees in the large n limit with our previous with the holographic calculation. Okay. And if you compute also, you can also compute in this framework the conformal anomaly, the integrated conformal anomaly, and you will find the same answer, that they both agree with the free field computation with boundary condition that preserve half of the half supersymmetry in the large n limits. So that would mean that we have some boundary charge that are do not get some quantum correction, and
is it just that you look at the answers and they seem to match between weak and so the weak coupling answer versus the strong coupling holographic one, or is there some underlying reason, like I think in the usual calculation there's some theorem that tells you that as you change the strength of the coupling, these logarithmic coefficients are going to change in the case without boundaries. Is there a corresponding statement with boundaries, or is it not?
We just computed for this and we find that, yeah, okay, it matches.
So it suggests that it probably is something.
Yeah, that suggests, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that's the principal interest. If you compute, in a sense, it's not that it kind of makes sense, but half supersymmetry preserving boundary condition, the maximal amount you can preserve in this setup. And what is the most special suffice for the extension of the boundary into the bulk, in fine, we'd say it would be the minimal suffice. Again, it kind of, okay, intuitively, but I have no really profound reason for that. So that was the result of the holographic computation. Okay. So let me summarize what we have done. So in quantum field theory, we have found some new terms defined at the intersection of the integral surface and the boundary. Okay, we depend strongly on the boundary conditions. We have found that the H flow between, you know, the Robin boundary condition between Neumann and Jericho is monotonic. For Neumann and Jericho boundary condition, the logarithmic term is proportional to the number of vertices of sigma. In d equal 3, it would be the number of intersection, and also the boundary charges. It captures the boundary charges. In the ADS-BCFT correspondence, we can actually compute the boundary terms, okay, holographically, both for the entanglement entropy and the conformal anomaly. The minimal surface prescription seems to match half-Suzy preserving boundary condition, okay, for the integrated conformal anomaly and the entanglement entropy. And the calculation at weak strong coupling match for n, large n, okay. And there are some open questions and future work to look at. So the first would be the interpretation of the tension T, okay, of the brain in the BCFT style. So does it correspond to different boundary condition? Intuitively, it should correspond to different boundary condition in the BCFT. Okay, so T equals zero is the minimal surface prescription. Correspond to half supersymmetry preserving boundary condition, but let's say I have t different to zero, maybe some value will correspond to a fourth of the supersymmetry or some special boundary condition. So that's something that we don't know yet. An interesting question would be: okay, we have two or three different prescription for IDS BCFT, and which one is the right one or which one should be preferred, favored? Okay, so that's something I'm starting to look at. That's a really interesting question. Also, all the work I have shown you is for orthogonal intersection. So you may wonder why orthogonal on intersection. Well, because it is easier to compute. Okay, if you want to compute entanglement entropy, your orthogonal intersection between the entangling surface and the boundary, you can actually compute things. As soon as you don't add this orthogonality, it becomes really, really, really complicated. Okay, so that would be to analyze this. Actually, it has been done in holographic for holographic entanglement entropy in ADS 4 BCFT 3 by Domenico Seminara, Eric Tony, and Jacopo Sisti. They have succeeded in computing this angle dependence, but not in higher dimension yet. And doing some numerical calculation on the lattice to guide us on what it should look like. And with this, I will thank you.
Dimensional case, you get these logarithmic terms. Basically, your expansion looks just like entanglement entropy of a system in one lower dimension.
Yeah.
Is there some way that you can identify, say, given a CFT, or maybe in some cases I can find a sort of another theory that lives on the boundary for which this is just the, like, can I think of these entanglement entropies as a bulk piece plus
some,
there's some other theory that lives on the boundary?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting. Yeah, I never thought about it. Yeah.
Because I think in the case of rebound boundary conditions, you can get these modes that are sort of confined to the boundary. So we want to like naturally try to, for a scalar field domain, try to naturally try to, you know, write down a theory of those modes.
Yeah, I never really thought, that's good.
I also had a question about this lattice calculation.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that it's very hard to put n equals 4 triangles on a lattice. So is there something else that you use instead, or?
If you want to, to put Young Mies on the.
What?
Yeah, no, what we can do easily is for the scalar field, just scalar field. For fermions also, you can. But yeah, if you want really to compute, for Young Mills, it's complicated. But for scalar field, actually, I've done the computation, and I have all the angle dependents, so that should be. I should write the article soon. But you can do it quite easily.
I guess if you could do a free gauge field as well. You basically have all the ingredients for a weakly couple.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, no more questions. Let's thank Jamal again.